Here we go, folks. Welcome to week number two of Health Ranger Live, our live presentation on financial preparedness and health preparedness. Welcome back. If you joined us in week number one, you already know the kind of information that you're getting in this presentation. We had a lot of people say thank you last week. In fact, I had the biggest outpouring of thanks from that event that I've ever experienced on any event ever before. I mean, even live audiences. So thank you. Thank you very much. I got to read you just this one. Here's from a woman named Jane. I'm not going to reveal her last name, but she said, as a retired bank auditor, I applaud your first Health Ranger Live teleseminar. It was immensely informative. And she said, having all that experience in the financial world, I believe that we, the people, we're not even being told one-tenth of the undercurrents that could pull us all down. And she says, while fear is not recommended, and I agree with that, being apprehensive enough to be totally prepared for anything that might come is. Thanks for helping me formulate my survival plan in all ways. That's from a retired bank auditor. So I was really happy to hear that, and thank you all for all of your thanks. Now, the disclaimer. Big disclaimer, same as last week, which is I'm not a financial advisor, and I don't pretend to be one. And I want to let you know that there is risk in everything that you do when it comes to finances, and especially in this market today, lots of volatility happening. So there's risk in doing things and there's risk in doing nothing. In fact, I believe there's more risk in doing nothing than there is risk in doing something. And by the way, breaking news just coming across the wires right now, the $700 billion bailout has just passed the U.S. Senate. That happened, I think, just 3 minutes ago. Or a few minutes ago, just passed the Senate. Now, we're going to talk about this bill. It hasn't passed the House yet, so it does need to pass the House in order for it to go to the president for his signature. We'll talk about that bailout in a few minutes, but I just wanted to bring you that breaking news. The U.S. Senate has passed the bill. It's a bloated bill. It was originally 3 pages when the Treasury wrote it up. It ballooned to 110 pages in the House. And now in the Senate, it's 450 pages. And you know why it's so big, folks? Have any idea why? Because they're packing it full of handouts. That's right. They're handing out the candy. It's trick-or-treat time in the American economy now. And in order to pass this big bailout bill that bails out the rich bankers, they're tacking on all of these unbelievable things. Like, for example, that the bill is going to require insurance companies to pay for mental health treatment of the people who are covered. Going to require them to pay for mental health treatment now, which, you know, we could debate on that another time, but there is one group that definitely needs mental health treatment, and those are the politicians voting for this bill. I mean, this is insane. It's a massive theft of money from taxpayers. It's putting money into the hands of the rich bankers, and it's going to greatly endanger our dollar. Now, we talked about that a lot last week, so I'm not going to repeat myself. We have all new information this week. I just wanted to cover that news for you. Continuing with the disclaimer, I want you to know that every decision involves risk, and that the investment advice that we shared with you last week, or suggestions, are long-term plays. They're not short-term plays. So if you invested in a gold mining company that we talked about last week and you saw it go up or go down, don't freak out. This is not a short-term play. This is, in fact, insurance against hyperinflation of the dollar. This is insurance against a crashing stock market. This kind of investment will pay off in a huge way if things get bad in the U.S. economy. So it's kind of like buying an insurance policy against hard times. However, if the stock market goes up, if this bailout magically works and suddenly all the debt disappears, and all of a sudden there's no more problem and people run out for Christmas and they go shopping and they're buying all this stuff and, wow, the economy's great, good times are back, then all those stocks and mining companies that we talked about last week, they're all going to drop in value. Because they only go up when the stock market goes down or when the value of the dollar goes down. So keep that in mind. And that's why I always insist that you work with a financial advisor to understand your particular financial needs your risks and your appetite for risk. If you're the kind of person who frets over your stocks and you're checking the value every hour of every day and it creates a lot of stress in your life, then I would recommend don't do it. You don't need stress right now. In fact, you need the opposite of that. You need confidence. So it all depends on you, exactly what you need. Now let's talk about the bailout. Oh yeah, one more comment on that. By the way, gold. Gold long-term, no doubt, is going to trend up, especially if there's hyperinflation, especially if this bailout passes. Gold is going to go up. I believe that strongly. However, in the short term, it could go down, even significantly. In fact, Gary Carlson, the gold guy that I recommended last week, he thinks that gold could, in fact, at some point go down as low as $600 an ounce before skyrocketing to several thousand dollars an ounce. That's his own analysis. And I want to give out his web address for you right here, because one of the things that happened last week is a lot of people called him, and he spent a lot of time with people on the phone, and he was very happy to do that, but he urged me to share with you his web address so you can go there first. Before you call Gary, go to his website, www.aeiccc.com. That stands for American Enterprise Institute, Cody Coin Company, AEICCC.com. Go there first, read Gary's analysis before you call him. So you'll be up to speed on all of that. All right, moving on to the bailout issue. The bailout, okay, just passed the Senate minutes ago. I put out an email, you may have seen it, Sunday night. I predicted that this bailout plan would pass. Even though I don't agree with its passage, I predicted it would pass because there's a lot at stake, and these politicians are being arm-twisted into passing this. They're being told privately behind closed doors that if they don't pass this, all commerce could grind to a halt. That's what they're being told. They're being told that if they don't pass this, the banks will fail. The economy will fail. So they're not being given much of a choice. So what they've been doing over the last few days is finding things to add into the bailout plan to make it look better, to make it a little more palatable to all the politicians who are going to vote on it. So they've been adding in all of these crazy things that, of course, are just part of the problem, you see. So here's an example, $100 billion in tax breaks. Right, so our government, which is broke, $9 trillion in debt, now almost another trillion being added on with this bailout bill. They want to just throw in some more tax breaks to make sure that the government goes even more broke more quickly. We've got the mental health treatment provisions now in there for insurance companies. Who knows what else is in there? I'm not sure that anybody's actually read it. I haven't been able to see the 450 pages yet. There might be bailouts for U.S. automakers because their sales are down. Well, Ford is down 34%. Across the board, automaker sales are down 26%. This is the beginning of the third wave of bankruptcy that we talked about last week. The third wave, the commercial bankruptcies. Remember, it was consumers first, and it was financial institutions second, and then third, it's going to be the commercial bankruptcies, and that wave is going to spread through the economy. We're seeing it with the automakers. We're going to see it with even companies like Microsoft. I think this Christmas season is going to be very, very bad for retailers, and then we're going to see a wave of bankruptcies across the retailers. And that's going to spread back to the financial institutions because many of them own the stocks or own the real estate or own the loans of these commercial entities that are now facing some very serious hard times. The bottom line in all of this, folks, is that the U.S. economy is contracting. And if the government had any brains, it would be shrinking too. It would shrink its expenditures. It would work to pay off its debt rather than adding to the debt. But instead, the government is expanding. So while the economy is shrinking, the government is expanding. It just couldn't resist. It's becoming a big socialist nation. It's taking over ownership of the homes. It's taking over ownership of the banks. It's taking over more than half the U.S. economy. We've now become, if this passes, we will become overnight a centrally planned economy. And you know what happens after that? Hyperinflation. always happens. Read your history books. That's what happens when you have a centrally planned economy. The currency is history. All right, what else can I tell you here about what's going on right now? Senator Harry Reid said today that a major insurance company is about to go bankrupt within days if they don't pass this bailout bill. There's also talk out there that it shouldn't be called a bailout bill anymore because the word is misleading people. You know, folks, it's not a bailout. No, it's a rescue. Yes, it's a rescue. Sounds nicer, softer. Sounds more responsible. We're rescuing people. We're rescuing the country. We're rescuing banks. We're not bailing out anybody. That sounds a bit rough, doesn't it? A bailout. No, they're saying we should use the word rescue. So now they're starting to play mind games with us, you see. They want us to change our language. This is classic Orwellian 1984 stuff. They want us to change our language so that we don't talk about this in true terms. They want us to change our language because they say if it doesn't pass, it's the fault of the word. Yeah, everybody was using the word bailout, and that was wrong, and so the word is what caused it to fail, and if the economy collapses, it's because of the word. That's what they will tell us. Insane. This is why I'm glad to see they have mental health treatment in the bill, because they need it. They really need it. All right, I know we have limited time. There's a lot to cover here. Let's get to this. We're going to be talking here today about safe havens. We're going to talk about how to be safe wherever you are. And why are we talking about safe havens? It's because we don't know what's coming. Could there be civil unrest? Well, it's possible. I mean, let's suppose that this bill doesn't pass. And let's suppose that commerce does grind to a halt. I mean, this is what I think, in fact, Senator Clinton said that. She's quoted saying that. I can't believe I'm quoting Senator Clinton. I was quoting Bush and McCain last week, so I guess it's time to quote from the other side of the aisle. She said commerce could grind to a halt. Top bankers in Japan are saying the U.S. needs to solve this to bail out these companies or Japanese banks are going to be in trouble. France just today has called for a $500 billion rescue fund. Note, it's not called a bailout. It's called a rescue fund to bail out European banks that are also near failure. So this is all happening. Now, suppose this really happens. Suppose these governments then lose the ability to borrow, especially the United States. If the bailout fails and these banks actually go under, we would have a rippling cascade, almost like a pandemic of cascading failures throughout the financial system. And that would cause governments to be unable to pay their employees. Now you think about that for a minute. What does government provide you that's important? And it comes down to basic infrastructure. Where does your water come from? It probably comes from a local water treatment facility that is in part staffed by government employees, maybe city employees, maybe county employees. What happens when those people don't get paid? What happens when the checks stop? I've often said that the stability of Western civilization is based on the expectation of the next paycheck. And if that paycheck stops, what happens to Western civilization? What really happens? Sure, some people will volunteer just for the good of the community, and good for them. Those people will show up for work and they'll volunteer because they know their jobs are important. But some people won't. They'll say, what am I doing here? I need to be at home protecting my family because, you know what, the riots have started. People aren't getting water. There's civil unrest. Because if you don't have water, you know, things could get out of hand. Depending on the city, depending on the population density, people might not be too happy about that. So some people won't show up at work, and then you have problems delivering basic services. So it's not just water, it's also electricity. And even though electricity is provided by private companies, how do they deliver electricity if they cannot conduct in commerce? If they can't conduct commercial exchanges, they can't pay their employees, they can't buy coal. They can't get delivery of coal because they can't pay the trains that are delivering the coal. How do they conduct business? So if you have this shutdown, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen, I'm just saying there's a chance that it could happen depending on where things go, and it's good to be prepared for this possibility. But if this happens, you could see an interruption, or what I call a temporary disruption of essential infrastructure services. That means basically food, water, electricity, emergency services, and hospital and health care. All of those things could go down. Oh, and fuel, by the way, fuel. Gasoline, natural gas, those kinds of things. And if you think about what happens in a society when those things fail, then you get a pretty good idea of why people are interested in being prepared, why you should be prepared in your home or your apartment or wherever you are, or some people are even choosing to have a safe haven somewhere else, somewhere outside the United States. And we're going to talk about that too. And that makes sense for a lot of reasons, not just because it's physically isolated from the United States, but also because your money goes a lot further there. For example, if you have $20,000 in savings in the United States, you can't live on that for very long. You know, maybe a year, maybe 2 years if you really stretch it. But if you go down to a place like Ecuador, you could live 5 or 10 times longer on the same amount of money. So it makes sense to go to a place where your money has a lot more spending value. And that's because things are a lot less expensive there. And it's true in Ecuador, it's true in Peru, it's true in Panama. Not as much true in Costa Rica, but it's still cheaper there than it is in the United States. So there are great reasons to consider that beyond just being physically isolated from whatever's happening in the U.S. There are also great reasons for staying put. If you have family, if you have children who are in school, if you have relatives, if you have very close ties to the community, if you are a police officer or a fireman or a paramedic, or you work at the water plant, I think you have a social duty to stick around and be part of the solution. You know, it's not good to just walk away from those responsibilities, but you also have to be smart about it. There might be a point where if you're the only one showing up at the water plant and no one else shows up, well, you probably can't run the thing by yourself, so what are you going to do? The sane thing to do is to go home and protect your family. And that ultimately is what each individual will decide to do if things get bad enough. So again, just to let you know, the context of what I'm about to share with you here, this plan for safe havens, the context is that I don't know if this is going to happen, and I think there's actually only maybe a 20% chance that something like this could happen in relation to this financial situation. But it's possible, and that's why we're covering this. So I don't want you to be afraid of what's possibly coming. In fact, my job here tonight is to eliminate fear, to help you overcome any kind of fears so that you can face that future with a lot of confidence. And that's what this plan is all about, this safe haven plan that I'm sharing with you here tonight. It's all about being safe, being informed, and being very, very confident in knowing that you can handle what's coming. And by the way, some of the clues I already gave you. Think about the big things that could fail if there are infrastructure failures. Water, electricity, emergency services, hospitals, fuel, and food. How are you going to get by without those things for a temporary time? Now, when I say temporary, what do I mean? It could be 2 days, like weathering a storm. If you were in New Orleans during the Hurricane Katrina, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. Weathering a storm. If you lived in New York during the power outages of the last few years, then you know what I'm talking about. A couple days. Pretty easy to get by on a couple of days, just with some basic preparedness measures. But what happens if it goes beyond a couple of days? What if it extends out to 7 days? I've noticed that beyond 48 hours, people start to get a little freaked out. For the first 48 hours, if there are infrastructure failures, people think it's like a day off. You know, stay home from school, stay home from work. There's no transportation, just stay home and party. And I've also noticed that Americans have very interesting priorities when it comes to a loss of electricity. You know what the very first thing they do is? This is what Americans do. Very first thing, when the electricity goes out, they rush to the freezer and start eating the ice cream before it melts. Yes, these are the priorities of our population, friends. Eat the ice cream. Oh my goodness, the ice cream is melting. Because, you know, it's the most important thing in my house. Eat the ice cream. Lick it off the sides of the cartons there, folks. Grab those straws. Slurp up that ice cream. The electricity's out. This is what people are actually doing. I have different priorities than that. I hope you do too. But the second thing that people do is they start barbecuing. Yeah, because all the meat is melting in the freezer. So they fire up the barbecue and they have a big cookout. They're eating ice cream and they're having a cookout. You know, this goes on for about 48 hours until people realize they have no water. And at that point, it starts to hit the fan, if you know what I mean. People start to get concerned. And the number one thing to realize here is beyond the 48-hour time window, if there are sustained infrastructure failures, is that people tend to think quite selfishly and understandably. We are all interested in our own survival. And typically, we put our own survival first, and then we put the survival of our family and children second. All right, so it's us first, and then it's our family second, and third is everybody else. And when people run around society thinking for themselves, it creates a kind of mentality where, you know, people rush into a Walmart and they buy all the water off the shelf and they argue, they may have fist fights over the water. Because they're not thinking, hey, let's share. Let's share and let's each have a little bit of water. No, they're thinking, you know, my daughters are at home and they're going to need some water or they might die. I'm taking the water. Screw the rest of you. That's what people are thinking. And if you don't believe me, just look at the footage from the LA riots, the Rodney King riots, the Watts riots. Look at what happened after Hurricane Katrina. Look at the precedent, not just in the United States, but around the world. And you will find for the first 48 hours, there's a lot of cooperation. After that, it's every person for themselves. This is just my observation. You may disagree with that, but that's fine. In any case, what you need to do is have a lot of things ready, things stored. So, we're going to talk about that. I'm going to give you a list here. I'm also going to email you this list, but let's get into this. Another principle that you need to understand here is the complexity of modern society. There are some great books about complexities of societies written by Jared Diamond. And he talks about Easter Island, and he talks about the failures of different civilizations throughout human history. And what Jared Diamond observes, quite correctly, I believe, is that the more complex a society becomes, the more susceptible it is to failure. And our society today, Western society, is very highly specialized. And the example I like to use here is the example that there's not one person in society today that understands, that knows how to make a pencil. Just a simple object, a pencil. Can you make a pencil? I can't make a pencil. There's no one person that can. There's no one that can tap the rubber trees and get the rubber for the eraser, that can smelt the metal and mold it into the little metal clasp that holds the eraser to the pencil, that can chop the trees and process all that lumber and cut it into the shape of the pencil and put the lead in the middle and have the graphite and have the paint and assemble it all together. There is no one person that knows how to do that anymore. Because society is a long supply chain of specialists who all depend on each other for knowledge and resources. We are all specialists. And the more specialists you have in a society, the longer the supply lines become. And inevitably, the more susceptible that society becomes becomes to systemic failure. So if there's any one failure in the society, such as a water failure or electricity failure, that failure tends to ripple throughout society and it becomes a much bigger problem than it would have if there were redundancies in society. What does a redundant society look like? It looks like an agrarian society. A redundant society is where the skills that are necessary for survival are shared among many people. That all the people that live in the town, yeah, they know how to garden. They know how to build a tool out of a stick and a steel end. I mean, down in Ecuador, they build tools. They actually build the tools right there on the spot. You don't buy them a shovel. You buy them the tip of a shovel, and they make the shovel. You know, an agrarian society is where people have all of these overlapping skills. So if one farm fails, guess what? The whole town isn't wiped out. People could step in. And if the water fails in one particular place, a well runs dry or something, no problem. The neighbor's got some water. You know, they're not dependent on timely or just-in-time imports of certain electronics or certain medicines or vaccines or certain raw materials like steel. They're not dependent on that. An agrarian society is highly redundant. So it is almost impossible to cause a systemic failure in an agrarian society because the skill set is so down to earth, literally, and it's also highly redundant across the population. This is another good reason to consider moving to a society that is more agrarian. Because if a failure, a big time failure, like the end of all commerce for 30 days, let's say, if that strikes the United States, oh, we're in a world of hurt here, especially the high population centers, the cities. We're in a lot of trouble. But in Ecuador, those people, no big deal. That's just another Saturday for them. If the electricity is off, that's kind of normal. If the water stops, no big deal. They've got the river. They've got buckets. They actually can go take a bath in the river. They've got food in the garden. They've got a well. They can use ropes and buckets and get water out of the well and all of these kinds of things. And they can get medicine out of the yard, and they've got ranch animals running around if they need to use them for some plowing purposes or things like they can milk the cows. You know, it's not an advanced society, I admit it, but it's highly, highly redundant. And that's one of the reasons why people are considering going there. Now let's talk about the realities of what could happen here in the United States. Again, this is not fear-mongering, so let me say that up front. This is a possible scenario. I think it's only maybe 10 to 20% possibility, but it could happen, so I want to make you aware of it. If the financial institutions fail and people lose their bank accounts, the population won't be happy, right? Nobody's going to be happy. They are going to march in the streets if that happens. Now, governments don't like people marching in the streets because it's a threat to their power. I mean, who knows? They might march all the way to the White House and kick the people out, and they can't allow that to happen. So marching in the streets will inevitably lead to martial law. It would have to. They would have to limit it. A couple of words of advice for you here. Number one, if there are marches, you don't need to join them. You don't have to go be on the front lines of that march and get arrested and get thrown in jail. You're not going to do any good from there. I mean, you may feel compelled to protest, and I agree with free speech and all that. It's your choice. But I'm just saying, you know what? Laying low can actually be a more effective strategy, and that's what I want to encourage you to do. I know a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe I should get something to protect myself and to protect my family, but the truth is, if you don't know how to use it, it's only going to become a danger to you. It's likely to be taken away from you and used against you. So don't go out and buy a gun if you're not trained as a law enforcement officer or someone who knows how to use them. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, so where are we now? Oh, here we go. The next thing that's very important to do in case things get bad is to have a go bag. And this is a term actually from the military, but it could apply to anybody. I actually have a go bag just for public speaking events. It's a bag where you have everything ready to go. So if you need to leave the house right now or within just a couple of minutes, you can just grab the bag and go. And that's a very important thing to have. And what should you have in your go bag? Well, you should have your passport, some cash, some water purification tablets. And let me tell you the brand I recommend right here. They're called Katadyn. That's K-A-T-A-D-Y-N. Katadyn MicroPure Water Purifier Tablets. And these are very easy to use. You drop them into water. They don't use iodine, by the way. They use sodium chlorite. It's the same thing that you get with stabilized oxygen, or very similar to that. And it purifies water in a few hours. You can take that with you, put it in your go bag. You can find those, by the way, at vitacost.com. It's the Katadyn MicroPure, that's P-U-R, MicroPure tablets. Next thing you want to have is a few 1/10 ounce gold coins. This is your currency in case the U.S. dollar is worthless, which it very well may be. You want to have a water purification bottle called the X-Stream water bottle. This is also made by Katadyn. By X-Stream, I mean it's spelled E-X and then the word stream. And these cost about $40 to $60 depending on where you get them. I think Vitacost sells them too. All the camping stores carry these. And these water bottles are really easy to use. You just pour water into the bottle and then you can squeeze it out and it's purified right there as you squeeze it out of the bottle. And it'll handle, I think, 400 or 500 bottles of water. And you can't purify really murky water in there, but if it's relatively clean to begin with, and you suspect it just might have some microorganisms in it, then this is a good way to purify that water. It will also take out a lot of heavy metals and PCBs and pesticides and things like that. I use these just traveling through airports because some airports don't let you buy water after you go through security because, you know, they're not really set up to allow people to drink water. And they think water is so dangerous that you couldn't possibly bring water on the airplane. So sometimes I have to fill up with water in the bathroom. Go in the bathroom sink, I fill up this Xtreme bottle, and then I've got water in the bottle. It's very easy to do. All right, next thing you should bring in your go bag are some protein bars, some raw nuts, and some multivitamins, even if it's just a very small pack. You want a little bit of basic nutrition in there, something that can carry you over for a day or two in an emergency. You also want personal care items, such as Dr. Bronner's soap, contact lens solution, any kind of personal care products that you need, shampoo, deodorant, whatever you need, have it in your go bag and have it in a small quantity because you don't want your go bag to be a huge duffel bag. You want it to be a very reasonably sized, relatively small bag that you can just pick up and go. All right, what else do you need in there? You need some communications equipment, a cell phone and cell phone charger. You need a Dynamo radio, and the best brand for that is called FreePlay, F-R-E-E-P-L-A-Y, FreePlay. These are Dynamo or hand-powered radios. The best one is called the Summit radio. There's also an LED lantern from FreePlay called the Indigo lantern. And I own all of these, by the way, and these are really outstanding products. There's also a flashlight and a radio combination. It's called Companion. You got that? So Summit is the name of the radio, Indigo is the name of the LED lantern, and Companion is the name of the flashlight, and these are all from a company called FreePlay. All one word, FreePlay. I think they're at, FreePlay, no, FreePlay.com, that's not the right website. I will get you the website for that. I'll send it to you via email. You can find these on Amazon.com and camping sites, too, so check out those. This is important. The radio is really critical for your go bag because wherever you go, you want to be able to stay in touch. You want to be able to know what's happening in society. You know, is martial law lifted? Is the crisis over? Or is it getting worse? You want to be able to tune into the radio and get that information. So that is absolutely critical to this whole thing. Next thing you need in your go bag, you need a first aid kit. Basic kind of camping equipment, a mirror, a compass, a toothbrush, a couple pairs of socks. Socks are very important to quality of life if you're out camping or just, you know, not living at home. You need some fire starters, basic. I don't recommend matches, but some magnesium fire starters are much better. I also recommend basic over-the-counter medication. Even though I'm not a big fan of over-the-counter drugs, there are certainly some acute emergencies where you can use this stuff. For example, over-the-counter painkillers, anti-itch medications, antihistamines, and even some prescription antibiotics could be important if, you know, you get wounded or something. And let's say you're out hiking and you cut your leg open on a tree stump or something. You can actually just open up a capsule of antibiotics and you can sprinkle that right on there. And you can kind of rub it in, and you've got an antibiotic treatment right there for your wound. Or you could just use salt water, or you could use iodine, or you could just actually use some herbs right there out of the forest. But if you're not in a forest, then you can use the antibiotics. So it's good to have those, even if they are prescription antibiotics. Herbal medicine chest. Good to have in your go bag, but I'm going to talk about that next week. We're going to talk about health preparedness and what exactly you can have in your herbal medicine chest. Duct tape. Got to have duct tape. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a go bag. Got to have a little bit of duct tape in there, some super glue, a pocket knife, a fork, a spoon, or a spork. Yeah, you can get sporks now, which are combination spoons and forks. Cups, tweezers, and the bags that I recommend, the brand, is called Maxpedition. It's like Max Expedition, but all jammed together. Maxpedition, Maxpedition. They make very high-quality bags for this. And they have one called the Jumbo VersiPack, which I recommend. So check that out. Maxpedition, that's the brand to go for. Okay, so that's your go bag. You got that? You got that so far? So we have the acting skills. which are really important. We have the idea of not being in the riots, not being in the protest. We don't want you to get arrested. You're not going to be useful if you're arrested. We want you to be calm, stay home, and be ready to deal with any kind of people, military people or National Guard people approaching your home. Be able to deal with them with calm, in a cool, calm kind of way, with a little bit of acting. It's very easy. What they're looking for is people who are freaked out, people who are afraid. If you're nervous, if you're like, oh my God, then they think that you're hiding something. So just chill out. It's not a big deal. They're just doing their jobs. They're hoping to get paid someday by a bankrupt government. They're probably not going to get paid, and they don't know that yet. So don't remind them. You know, they might not like to hear that. Have a few chocolate bars. Have your go bag in case you need to go. And just chill out. You'll be fine. It's not a big deal. I know some of you might listening to this might say, well, wait a minute, this sounds like a big deal. What you're talking about is a big deal. I've never done that kind of stuff before. I've never dealt with martial law. Well, truth is, in martial law scenarios, most people don't get arrested. It's just the people who cause trouble. So don't cause trouble. Chill out. You know, you'll be fine. All right, let's talk about the two strategies now, staying at home or leaving the country. Staying at home strategy. This is for most people, because I understand from your emails that most people cannot buy land in Ecuador. It is kind of expensive to buy the land, even though living there is cheap after you buy the land. Most people have ties to the community, or they have children in school, whatever. So they want to stay home. All right. Here's my advice on staying home, right here in the U.S. or Canada or Europe or wherever you're listening from. And by the way, we have people listening from 20, probably 25 different countries. So hope you're all enjoying this. Thanks for tuning in from all over the world, by the way. So number one, don't be in a highly dense populated area. Don't be in the inner city. The inner cities are the death zones, folks. And that's not an exaggeration. That is an accurate term. Any kind of civil unrest that you've seen historically tends to turn the cities into death zones, or at least danger zones. I mean, that's where things get out of control, because law enforcement can't respond quickly enough to the very high demands on their services. Population gets out of control, can't be stopped. I mean, if you think about it, law enforcement works in a town or a city because most people don't act out on their impulses or their fears. Most people abide by the rules. The police only respond to a very small number of people who freak out and break the rules. And even then, there really aren't enough cops in most cities to keep it all under control. Now, in a riot kind of situation, the number of people acting out on their impulses greatly overwhelms law enforcement. So law enforcement, even when it's trying to do its best, cannot respond in a way that handles all the people. So law enforcement, forget it. It's not going to be able to take control of the situation immediately. And that's why they might have to bring in National Guard or even military people at some point, just to kind of create some calm, you know, to stop the riots, stop the people breaking out all the shop windows and looting and all of that. And by the way, I agree with that. I agree. You got to come in and just kind of have you got to stop the riots. You got to have some peace before you can start to rethink what happened and start to solve problems. You got to have peace. You can't have just people running around all over the place. So don't be in that zone. So if you live in the inner city, you might want to think about moving to a lower population density area before things get potentially crazy, right? All right, so the suburbs are much better. A neighborhood where there's more distance between the houses, a lot better. If you have a yard, that's even better. A little bit of grass. Space is a good thing. In the inner cities, the multi-unit apartment structures are the worst. Those are very, very dangerous. For a number of reasons, mostly because the entrances and exits are very easy for people to dominate and control. So a gang member can come in there and just by taking over the entrance can control access to the entire structure. So you don't really have any freedom if you live in an apartment building, unless you're willing to use the fire escape, which you probably never used, and you're not looking forward to it either, if I'm guessing correctly. So don't be in an apartment building. The other thing is that it's hard to hide in an apartment building. One of the strategies here is that if things get too crazy, you want to just lay low, you want to be quiet, you don't want to have any lights on, don't make any noise, don't be seen. Just make your neighbors think that you're not there. Now, you can't do that in an apartment because your neighbors can hear you. the people beneath you, especially, they can hear you. So it doesn't really work in an apartment. Work to get out of an apartment if you possibly can in the near future. Another important principle in cities is that your safety depends in large part on your neighbor's preparedness. If your neighbor has extra food and water and a way to heat their dwelling, then they're not going to be freaked out and they're not going to become a problem. But if you're surrounded by people who are completely unprepared, which is the case for most of us, I mean, most people are not prepared for any of this stuff. If you're surrounded by those people, not a good sign, because they can become desperate. And here's what happens. These are the boundary issues that happen in those situations. And I've been there in one of these situations, so I know what I'm talking about, which is that, okay, you're the one who's prepared, right? You have extra water. You have extra storable food, which we'll talk about that, where you can actually get that. You have flashlights. You have dynamo radios. You've got all the gear that you need to just hunker down and be fine for 2 days or 5 days or 15 days, whatever it takes, for peace to prevail in the community. Well, you start hearing about your neighbors that are running out of water. And they've got two young kids, and the kids need water, and they need food, and they're starving. They're hungry. And so you offer to help them like any good, compassionate human being would. You offer to help them. And so that you give them some of your food and some of your water, and then word begins to spread. And they tell another neighbor, and they tell another neighbor. And pretty soon you've got, you know, a dozen families now depending on you, using your water and eating your food because they refused to prepare. Now, what's the correct boundary on this? I'll leave that up to you to decide what to do. But I will say this, be very careful what decision you make here. Because if things get bad, they're not going to be satisfied with you saying, sorry, no more, the rest is just for us. They're not going to be happy with that answer. And you may think, well, wait a minute, human beings are basically good people and they're all going to cooperate. Everybody's just going to cooperate. Okay, I don't believe that because I've seen what human beings are capable of. And I don't believe they're all just going to cooperate after the first 48 hours. So I would say that, in my opinion, it is up to each person and each family to prepare for themselves. This is a personal thing. You are under no obligation to help others unless you are able to do so and can do so in a safe way that allows you to continue protecting your own family. So think about those boundaries very, very carefully. You may have extra stash, and you might say, this is the stash for the neighbors. This is the extra water. This is the extra food for the neighbors. But you may have some that say, this is just for my family, and you might have to actually find a way to hide that because they're going to want it. Believe me, they're going to want it. The other strategy is to go out and educate your neighbors before all of this happens, to say, hey, you guys should prepare too. Because you know what? There could be an earthquake. There could be a hurricane. There could be a power failure. There could be civil unrest. There could be war sometime in the future. Who knows? I mean, things happen. That's why they're called acts of God, because no one knows except God what's going to happen. So these things could happen. Your neighbors would be smart to prepare. The downside to that, the risk to that, is that if they choose not to prepare, and 99% of them will choose that, all you've done is alerted them to the fact that you are prepared. And one day, when something bad happens and they run out of water, guess who they're going to come calling? They're going to be knocking on your door and saying, oh yeah, hey, we remember. You were the one who was prepared. You have all the loot. How about sharing with us? And at that point, you're going to need a lot more than just a few chocolate bars to make them go away. Again, I'm all for helping your neighbors, but you know what? Your neighbors can just completely devastate your supplies if you're not careful. So have a plan beforehand. Okay, I know we're getting close to the hour here, and we got a lot more to cover. I'm going to go just slightly over the hour here for this. So let's continue. Store a lot of water. This is just a good thing to do no matter what, whether there's an earthquake, whether there's a hurricane, anything. Store a lot of water. And it's easy to store because you can just get it right out of the tap. You'll filter it later. But right now, you can just take tap water, put it in plastic bottles and soda bottles, or, you know, whatever water bottles you can find. Store that in the garage or around the house in certain places. You know, water is pretty easy to store. And remember this, you're going to need a minimum of 5 gallons per day per person. Think about that. That's a lot of water. I actually tried to store water just for 30 days. That's a lot of water. That's 150 gallons of water. It's a lot of bottles. Think about it. You need water to survive. You need water to bathe. You need water just to wash from time to time. So storing water is very, very important. And it's very cheap to do, very easy to do. You can probably just use soda bottles that you have sitting around. Well, hopefully you don't drink soda. But a lot of people do, so they have soda bottles. Or you can use milk bottles if you're a milk drinker, or whatever you have, use it. Later on then, if you ever need that water, you're going to use a gravity water filter. And again, the company is called Katadyn, K-A-T-A-D-Y-N. And you can take this water and you can pour it into a gravity filter, and gravity will make the water go through these ceramic filter elements. And within a few minutes, you'll have fresh drinkable water. Well, not fresh, but clean, let's say. Non-toxic water that you can drink. So it's okay to store it in a way that is not necessarily drinkable. You can store tap water. You can even put a couple of drops of chlorine. You can put, chlorite, sodium chlorite would be the thing to do, the Katadyn MicroPure, not chlorine, but bleach. You can actually put one or two drops of bleach. I know that doesn't sound correct, but it is. Bleach will prevent bacterial growth in the water, in the bottles, and one or two drops of unscented, just completely regular bleach will prevent this bacterial growth, and then when you filter it out, you'll filter out the bleach, especially if you have a carbon block filter later. So this is one of the things that people have always done when they store water, is they put a couple of drops of bleach in there. Just one or two drops per gallon of water is all you need. Doesn't really take very much. Now, here's a really interesting product. It's called the MSR Miox, M-I-O-X. You got that MSR, that's MSR space Miox, M-I-O-X. And what you can do with this device, which is really cool, it's made for campers, is you can take any kind of salt in it, like rock salt, and you put it in this device, and you hit go, and it turns it into sodium chlorite, which is a water purification chemical, just like the Katadyn MicroPure tablets. And then you can pour this into water, and it will purify the water for you because it oxidizes any germs or bacteria or pathogens, anything like that. It's kind of an expensive product. I think it's a couple hundred bucks. It's the size of like a large marker, like a marker pen, a really thick permanent marker. So it's very portable, and it does use some batteries, so it's something that can be useful, but you have to have batteries to use it. Okay, next thing you should be storing in your home. This is your stay-at-home strategy, remember? You got to be able to outlast any kind of temporary failures in infrastructure. Food, remember, food, electricity, water, fuel, anything like that. So you're going to need some food. Dried superfoods are great. Goji berries. Just have some goji berries sitting around. Have some fish oil capsules so you can get vitamin D in case you're not able to get outside and get some sunshine. Have some nutritional supplements available, you know, mushroom extracts, cacao, you know, multivitamins, things like that. Have all of that in your home so that you can actually get through this time. And last week I mentioned quinoa, and the way you spell that is Q-U-I-N-O-A, quinoa. And this is the grain that's been eaten in Peru for a long time. And quinoa is great because it's a complete protein. It has all 8 essential amino acids. It's very cheap to get. You can get it from Walton Feed. That's waltonfeed.com. They have organic quinoa in long-term storable number 10 cans. It's a complete protein. You just add water and boil it, and you have food. And it's not maybe the best food in the world if you just eat it plain. But hey, you know what? It'll keep you alive. It'll get you through some difficult times. And by the way, I'm going to talk about another food next week, but I'll just give it away right now. I'm going to give it away. Here it is. The number one best food that you can have in the house for long-term storability and complete nutrition, you're not going to believe me, is, in fact, a human-grade freeze-dried dog food. Yeah, hear me out on this. Don't freak out. It is by a company called The Honest Kitchen. And they're found online at thehonestkitchen.com. And what they do is they make really human-grade food for dogs. And they freeze-dry vegetables and herbs and even some nutritional supplements like seaweed. And they have different formulas. Some are made with quinoa. Others are made with freeze-dried turkey. Others are made with chicken for those out there who want to have more meat in their diet. And you can buy these in 10-pound boxes. And they are the best value for long-term nutrition, real organic nutrition. You add water, you don't even have to cook it. It creates kind of a mush, kind of a green, tasty mush. And you may not like it at first, but my answer to you is if you don't like it, you're not hungry enough. It's actually very good if you're hungry enough. I've actually taken this on airplane trips, and I've eaten this on airplanes. I kid you not. Because it has no junk in it like the human camping food. All that camping food you find for humans, it's all loaded up with MSG and yeast extract and artificial colors and hydrogenated oils. It's just garbage. Turns out the best camping food you can buy is The Honest Kitchen, food for dogs. Yeah, but it's all human grade. In fact, this company, I think, on the side, they make the human camping food. They just add in more chemicals. The stuff for dogs and cats is pure. There's nothing added to it. So it is the best long-term storable food. So check that out, thehonestkitchen.com. In fact, I have some specific recommendations for you here. Let me find those. Oh, yeah, here we go. The one that is chicken plus quinoa is called Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E. 10 pounds of Thrive makes 40 pounds of fresh food when you add water to it. By the way, you know who else uses this? Small airplane pilots, when they fly over Alaska or they fly over Arctic regions or regions of, you know, lots of wild nature, lots of forest, they carry this dog food in their planes. Why? Because if they go down, they want to be able to survive, right? And you're not going to survive on the Big Mac you had before you took off for lunch. You're going to need some real nutrition. So they pack this stuff in the back of their airplanes. They know that if they can find a river or a stream, they can add water and they can live off of this stuff for a long, long time. It may not be cuisine, but it will keep you alive. And that's the main point. And it'll keep you sharp because this is real food. You know, you'll be mentally sharp from this as well. All right. I know we're almost out of time for the hour. One person here is asking, what about sea vegetables for stored food? Yes, absolutely. Sea vegetables are fantastic. If you have them dried and in plastic bags or what are those called? The storable bags where they vacuum the air out of them. Food saver, I think. Anything stored in there is a really good idea. And by the way, if you have questions, you can email them right now to healthrangerlive@naturalnews.com, and we will begin answering questions here in the next few minutes. Another question that's come in is, what about using hydrogen peroxide instead of bleach for water? Yes, absolutely. If it's food-grade hydrogen peroxide, that is an outstanding choice, food-grade hydrogen peroxide. But don't use the stuff off the shelf at the pharmacies, because that is not food-grade, and there are chemical contaminants in that stuff. Food grade is very important to find. In fact, it's good to have some hydrogen peroxide around for lots of different reasons. Okay, one more thing here. For security of your home, it is important that you have a door jam or a deadbolt lock on the door, but I like to actually go out and buy those devices. They look like a long stick, and you can kind of wedge it up underneath the doorknob. And it makes it difficult for an intruder to kick down your door. These are great. And cops hate these when they're breaking into, you know, drug houses or whatever. So I've heard a lot of stories from cops trying to kick the door in and it didn't work because they had one of these door jams or door stops in it. Now, of course, in your case, we're talking about you protecting yourself from criminal elements. Obviously, if someone from law enforcement shows up, you should open the door. After you identify that they are who they say they are, you should open the door and do your best to cooperate with them and not cause trouble. And if it's military, the same thing. You should just be cool, chill out, give them some chocolate bars. But if people are trying to kick your door down, then it's good to make it difficult for them to do so. And we'll talk about some other strategies next week as we will continue this. Now we're going to move on to Q&A. So we have a lot of questions coming in. They're really great, great, great questions. And I can tell from the questions already that that you really liked this information, even though some of it was considered maybe a little hardcore by some of you. That's fine. I know this is new to a lot of people. A lot of people live in society today, and they haven't really thought about what happens if all of these things break down. What do you really do? How do you survive? How do you protect your family? How do you be part of the solution instead of becoming part of the problem? And I got to tell you, if there is civil unrest, all those people who run out into the streets and start causing trouble, those people are not being productive. And I don't support that. Even though, you know, it may very well be justified, emotionally speaking. And every once in a while, you know, there are revolutions in countries throughout history, and sometimes that happens. Just, you don't have to be the person on the front lines. All right. Got an email from a law enforcement officer who says that he concurs with my response about recommending firearms only if you know how to use them. Thank you, Ralph, for sending that in. Thank you. Again, it's if you want to arm yourself, you need to be very proficient in knowing how to use firearms safely. If you're not very proficient at it, it's more likely to be used against you. Also, he's asking, have you heard from the Army Times that an Army brigade is being deployed in the U.S. as of October 1? Yes, I've heard of that. I believe that is a true story. It was reported in the Army Times, and I don't know where they're going with that, but it's not hard to use your imagination. If things get out of control, they might need some military help to try to bring peace back to certain cities or certain neighborhoods. It's just a safety precaution from the people in Washington. You know, they don't want civil unrest to get out of control because it would be a threat to their power base. So they're going to use anything they can to stay in power, even while they're ripping you off, by the way. They're stealing your money, they're stealing your paychecks, they're stealing your savings, but they want you to remain calm. I want you to remain calm too, but I don't want you to let them steal your savings. And that's why we talked about all those strategies last week about protecting your savings from the hyperinflation of the dollar. Next question. I've heard that chia seeds are the ultimate survival food. Yeah, they are. They're really great. They have omega-3 fatty acids in them. However, I don't know if you've ever eaten a big bowl of chia seeds. I've actually done that, and it gives you this massive stomach ache because they expand in your stomach. So if you eat all these chia seeds and you drink a bunch of water, you bloat up like a giant Pillsbury Doughboy, and it's not a very pleasant thing. So you need to have something other than chia seeds at the same time. Chia seeds and quinoa would be a great idea. Or chia seeds and some of that Honest Kitchen dog food. Yum! Add some water, spoon that stuff up. And again, if it's not tasty, you're not hungry enough. Okay, next question. Are there any legal issues in buying gold? Yeah, it's legal. I think I know what you mean. Some people are concerned that if they buy gold from the wrong source, that their name might go in the customer list, and then they might get contacted by the government later on, you know, to confiscate the gold. Well, that's not just a possibility. I think that's exactly what's happening. I do have knowledge right now that the FTC and the FDA, for example, are confiscating customer lists of nutritional supplement companies. I know this firsthand from doing interviews on this. So the government is building lists of people who are into natural health. Get that. And you can be assured that they're building lists of people who are buying gold. So the answer here is to buy gold from people who don't keep those lists. And who might those people be? Well, I can tell you this. I wouldn't recommend anyone who was keeping a list. I wouldn't recommend anyone who was going to turn over a list to the federal government. So you can work with the person I recommended, or if you know someone else, you can work with them. Another strategy that was mentioned by another reader is to go to gold trade shows and buy gold with cash. And that's fine if you know what you're doing. But you might go in there and think you're buying a really valuable set of numismatic coins and you find out that you got taken. So if you don't know, don't do that, because you can easily get taken if you're just paying cash somewhere. All right. What if you already have a lot of physical gold in your possession and you want to move to South America? How do you transport it there without it being stolen or confiscated? Oh, that's a great question. And I'm not going to tell you who asked that because I'm sure that person doesn't want their name all over the internet. So, but thanks for asking. Here's a tip right here. This is worth the full cost of being part of this. This one tip right here. This is absolutely brilliant. And I didn't think this up, but I learned about this. It's absolutely brilliant. Check this out. The U.S. has a law about carrying currency in and out of the country. And I think the limit is $10,000 in currency, right? Although it might be $5,000, but I think it's $10,000. Well, did you know that you can buy gold coins that are stamped with a face value on them? For example, you can go out and buy $10 gold eagle coins. Now, by $10, I mean that's what's stamped on the face of the gold coin. It says $10, and it's a gold eagle. Now, it's 1/4 of an ounce of gold. So do the math here. How much is that coin actually worth? Well, if gold is $1,000 an ounce, which it may be very soon, then that coin is actually worth $250, even though the face value is $10. Well, according to the information I have with the Department of Treasury, you can, in fact, carry $10,000 worth of these coins at their face value in and out of the country. And you are in full compliance. Now, I encourage you to check this out for yourself, because I've not tested this by actually carrying $10,000 of face value of these coins through, because, of course, that would be what? If they're 1/4 of an ounce each, well, let's see. $10,000 in face value would be about 250 ounces of these coins, or about $225,000 in value, even though the face value is only $10 per coin. So, okay, let me start over. In all, if you lay the coins out on the table and you add up the numbers that are stamped on the coins, it says a total of only $10,000, but the gold itself is worth $250,000. You see what I'm saying? So you can carry this, based on the information I know right now, you can carry this in and out of the country legally without getting into trouble, because the face value is $10,000 or less. Now, again, I encourage you to double check that. Don't blame me if you try this and you get caught, because they might change the rules. Who knows? People are crazy in Washington these days. They can change the rules every day. But this is my understanding. And that would be a legal way to carry literally $250,000 worth of gold in and out of the country. Now, that might not be a safe way to do it. If you fall asleep on the airplane and somebody takes your bag, they're going to go home rich and you're going to go home crabby. But it is one way to get it done. Now, you do need to check the laws of the country where you're bringing the gold into, if they will, in fact, honor the face value of those coins or not. And I don't know about Ecuador. I don't know about their situation. If you really want to play it safe, bring in no more than $10,000 worth of gold in terms of the gold value itself. So be very careful about this. I was just sharing that tip with you that I know to have been true at one time, and it may very well continue to be true. But it's a very clever way, wouldn't you say? You know, the Treasury says this is a $10 coin. Okay, we'll count it as $10. All right, here's another question. If you have to choose between paying down credit card debt or putting income into emergency preparedness, which is better to do? Well, in my opinion, you need to be prepared for these things at all times. Basic preparedness is number one priority, in my opinion. I would say you need to get the water stored, you need to get the food, you need to get basic communications, just some basic things like we talked about here. Get that covered so that you're prepared for any emergency or any outage of basic infrastructure, a water failure, a power failure, civil unrest, whatever. Do that first, and then worry about your credit card debt second. Now, that's my personal advice. That may cause you to pay a lot more money in interest fees on your credit card. So you got to be the one to choose what's right for you. But I say that your safety is at risk unless you cover these basics. All right, pardon me, just getting a drink of water there. Also have some fresh juice here because I was doing some juice feasting today. All right, a lot of questions about gold. People are asking about Ecuador. All of those questions will be answered next week. We're going to talk about Ecuador. Another lots of questions about Ecuador. All right. People are asking about could Ecuador be taken over by a bunch of Colombian drug lords? Well, I think the Ecuadorian people would resist that. Yeah. the Ecuadorian people, they kind of like their own land. And besides, Colombia is actually on the northern border of Ecuador, and that's not a very safe place to be. And so the places that I've been recommending to people are in the southern part of Ecuador. Let me give you another resource, by the way, for Ecuador. There's a gentleman who sells information and some Ecuadorian real estate, too. His name is Gary Scott, and you can find him online at GarySCott.com. Now, I don't know Gary Scott. I've never met him personally. I know he represents a lot of properties that are in the on the beaches in Ecuador, on the west coast. And he has a lot of jungle properties and lowland properties. You might want to check him out. I don't vouch for him. I don't know him. But you might want to check him out. The one that I'm recommending is Joseph Simonetta, and that's VilcabambaHomes.com. That's spelled with a V, VilcaBamba, VilcabambaHomes.com. And I can tell you this. I haven't announced this publicly, but I'll tell you this right here, that at least 5 Natural News readers already own land on that ranch. It is becoming a natural health mini community right there. We've got all kinds of people there with all kinds of skill sets, like natural medicine doctors. We've got herbalists. We've got soap makers and gardeners and a former pharmacist. I mean, it's incredible who's going there. So check that out, VilcabambaHomes.com. All right, questions about Canada. Hey, hi, Canadians. Great to have you on the event here. Question is, if the U.S. economy goes under, what will this mean for Canada? Well, Canada is tied to the U.S. economy, definitely. The same is true with Europe. If the U.S. economy goes under, everybody's going to hurt. There's no question about it. Even Japan will be suffering. China will suffer. But the U.S. will suffer the worst. Canada will be hurt, but it will survive it. Canada's government, I think, is not threatened by a failure of the U.S. government. So you're probably a lot safer in Canada. But, of course, the folks in Canada already know that. I know a lot of Americans who went to Canada. They're up there right now listening to this, talking about how good it is in Canada. And I agree with them, except it's too cold for me. I like to be able to grow some food, right? Hawaii or South America is really good. Okay, someone asks here, it is illegal to market foods as superfoods in the EU. Is this going to be outlawed in America? What about superfoods? Well, okay, that's fine. I don't think this really has anything to do with the preparedness. But if you're trying to, let's say, start a business to make some money so that you have more money for preparedness, I think that getting into superfoods is a pretty good business idea. And I'm not sure about the marketing regulations in your particular country, but I encourage you to check them out so that you stay within the bounds of the regulations as long as those regulatory bodies continue to exist. Okay, question is about, you know, I'm recommending The Complete Investor. The Complete Investor, which is Stephen Leeb's financial newsletter, says that the bailout is absolutely necessary, but I'm against the bailout, and yet I recommend The Complete Investor. So how does this crazy triangle actually calculate? This is a question from Pam. Thanks, Pam, for your question. Well, I disagree with Stephen Leeb on this. I think that we need to not do the bailout. We need to let these institutions fail. We need to let the investors who made these bad decisions eat the losses for their bad decisions. That's what I think. Stephen Leeb, on the other hand, doesn't want to see any more financial panic. And I guess he would rather see the U.S. take on a lot more debt than see the financial institutions fail. I personally don't mind seeing the financial institutions fail because I think that, well, I'm a believer in the free market. And I think that if people make bad investment decisions, that they should be responsible for their losses. I also don't think that we should use taxpayer money to bail out these rich bankers. And I think this bailout is a complete fraud. I think it's outrageous what's being put in it. It's a giant freebie giveaway program, giving away money to the rich and soaking the working class. And I know where it's going, because when the bailout kicks in, and I continue to believe that it will, I think that foreign nations are going to stop lending money to the U.S. In other words, they're going to stop buying U.S. debt. And when that happens, oh man, we are in trouble in this country. How is the government going to pay for itself and all these social services and all these entitlement programs if it can't get money from other lenders? How's it going to pay for that? The answer is it isn't. It isn't. All right. How much water do you need to ride out the financial storms? A month's supply? This is a question from Julio in California. Gracias, Julio, for your question. How much water? Well, 5 gallons a day per person is what I mentioned before. 1 month's supply, that would be fantastic if you could store that much water. People might wonder what you're doing in your house if they walk in and you have a wall of water stacked up all in your room. One way to do this is to have a giant fish aquarium with no fish in it. And when they ask, just tell them, well, the fish died, so I just have the water. It'll be fine. You can drink the fish water. You can even grow some algae in there and have some nutritious algae water. Actually, there's a company selling that. I'm not kidding. Okay. You said if the bailout fails, here's another question from Jenny, a cascade of failures would go through the financial system and it would cause governments to be unable to pay their employees. Oh, explain your logic. Okay, here it is. The financial failures are actually happening in parallel with the government going broke. The reason the government goes broke is because the bailout would cause the dollar to hyperinflate, which would cause the central banks in other countries to be unwilling to lend more money to the United States, knowing that the money that they're being repaid with is going to be less and less valuable over time. Does that make sense? In other words, the currency itself is being debased. So those overseas countries, Japan, China, the Middle East, they're not going to be interested in buying more debt from the United States. It's like buying a bond. In fact, it's a treasury bond. And bonds lose value as the inflation of the currency kicks in. So when the currency becomes worth less and less, the bond becomes worth less and less. In other words, the debt becomes worth less and less. So the more the dollar is hyperinflated, the less the debt holders actually own. And that's why they're not going to keep buying more debt. This is my theory. Anyway, this is my logic. You may disagree with it, and that's fine. There are different theories, lots of competing theories out there, and I don't have a crystal ball. I may not be 100% correct about this. In fact, I know I'm not going to be 100% correct. I mean, that's impossible. This is just what I see coming, and I see that hyperinflation is a very real threat now, and that the lenders who are buying U.S. debt are going to be fed up with it, and they're going to stop buying debt, and that's when the government is going to stop having all this money come in. At that point, the government's going to have to decide, do we shrink? Do we cut off government services? Or what do we do? Do we just start confiscating wealth from the taxpayers and use that to fund government? You see, I don't know where that one's going. They might literally just start having a tax, like 1% of your savings account every month goes to the government. They could do that. They could pass that law and call it a national emergency. They could confiscate gold again. They did that back in the Great Depression. There's a precedent for this. There are all kinds of things that they could do. We don't know what they'll have in mind. We don't know how sane the people in Washington are. But I do know that they're not totally sane. They are, in fact, crazy in some ways. Okay, question. Vaughn from Toronto asked, do we have a disaster preparedness checklist? Yes, I'm going to send you a checklist via email in the next day or two. Some of the things that I mentioned during this show and some other things that I didn't mention. So I'll have a list for you. And I'll also tell you exactly where to buy these things. I'll give you the online sources. A couple here right now are BePrepared.com. That's a great one. Be Prepared, that's called Emergency Essentials. Go to Be Prepared, that's B-E, and then the word prepared with a D on the end of it. BePrepared.com. You can also go to The Honest Kitchen, we already mentioned. That's TheHonestKitchen.com. WaltonFeed.com. And of course, Vitacost.com is where you can get the purification tablets for water, the Xtreme portable water filter, and many other things. So those are some of the websites I'll be giving you. All right, another question on Ecuador. Okay, Leslie has a question about Social Security. Will Social Security continue, excuse me, and for how long? And this actually relates to another question that's here, which is someone says that her husband works for the federal government and is wondering if he's ever going to have a pension, and is supposed to have a pension coming due. Well, okay. My answer on both of these is the same, that both Social Security and pension promises, these are all just promises. These are IOUs from a government that is bankrupt. Now think about that. These are IOUs from a government that is bankrupt. Now you know what happens. If you ever loan money to a friend that always owes you money, a friend that's broke, a friend with a crack habit that's broke and always owes you money, do you ever get paid? Of course not. You never get paid from that friend. Do you think you're going to get paid from the government that's addicted to spending, that's addicted to bailing out rich bankers? Do you think you're going to get paid? I think not. That's my opinion. I don't think so. I don't think that people of my generation, and I'm 39 years old, I don't think we'll ever see a penny of Social Security. Never, ever, ever. Never happen. It's gone. I mean, it's gone right now. It's not even maybe going to be gone in the future. It is gone right now. They've already spent Social Security. There's just a big IOU sitting there. And they've spent it, and they still are in debt. The government's now almost $10 trillion in debt as soon as this bill passes. How are they ever going to pay you? How are they going to pay me? They're not. And even if they do, you know what they're going to pay us with? Hyperinflated currency. Yeah, they're going to pay us the, you know, $800 a month or whatever they promised on the chart. You've seen the Social Security chart. Like, when you're 65, you'll get $850 a month. Do you know how much that will be worth when you're 65? That'll be worth about $2. You'll be able to buy a loaf of bread with it. You know, maybe. That's if you're lucky. So if you ever even get it, if you ever see it, you can count on it being virtually worthless. In my opinion, this is what's happening. This is the clever way that every government bails itself out. It devalues the currency, it prints more money, it creates more money, and then effectively it steals the wealth from the people as a way to pay off its debts. And by the way, when we talk about stealing wealth, there's one thing I forgot to mention during the whole show, which is that this bailout bill is really just a distraction. This is a decoy, folks. The real stuff is going on behind the scenes. Monday, 2 days ago, the Federal Reserve created without a vote, without any debate whatsoever, almost in secret, they created $620 billion and added it to the money supply. That was on Monday. So we're out there debating over the $700 billion bill, and the Fed just, boom, $620 billion. They just create that on Monday afternoon just for the heck of it. And they can do that every day. And they are doing it. They did $250 billion the week before, another $180 billion the week before that. I mean, those may not be the exact numbers, but it's right in that range. Hundreds of billions of dollars is what they've created week after week after week. You know, at some point, it just becomes so absurd. At some point, the hyperinflation effect is just inevitable. It just kicks in. And then your dollars become worth less and less because the price of everything goes up. Food becomes more expensive. Fuel becomes more expensive. Everything that you need becomes more expensive. Your dollars are worth less and less in terms of purchasing power. And this is a direct result of the Fed going out there and creating hundreds of billions of dollars out of thin air. This is why it's bad to have the Fed in charge of the money supply. Okay, next question from Debbie. How do you bug out with animals, and what do you do with them if you stay home? Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, Debbie, because one of the strategies I have here on my list is to say that having a big, angry guard dog is a great idea. It doesn't have to be angry, actually. They just have to be part of the act, just like you. You have to teach your dog how to act. Get on up there. Get on angry. Get up there. Bark. Do some barking. Let them join you in the act. And then they will scare off people who are not supposed to be, you know, around your house or your apartment or whatever. It's good to have a dog, a big dog, German Shepherd, Rottweiler, something, Doberman, something like that. or a mean, angry Chihuahua. Yeah, let them go. Give him some goji berries. Power him up. Send him out to the front door. Go get that gold back. Little chihuahua, gold hunting chihuahua. Bring back the gold. So, okay, sorry about all that comedy. I get distracted because some of this is just so comedic. How do you bug out with your animals? You just take them with you. You have a car, you have a vehicle. You're taking your animals with you. And how do you keep them at home? If you stay home, well, just don't let them out during the day. Take them out only at night so that you're not drawing attention to the fact that you have this large animal. And, or you could take another strategy, depending on your neighborhood. You could put like big chewed bones out in front of your front door and a big sign, dog bites first, owner shoots second, so whatever kind of sign you want to put out there, it's up to you. We'll talk about signage next week. There's some very effective signage that's been used in looting situations that keeps people away from your house. You could put an old, a giant bowl, like a dog food bowl that's half chewed. Put that out on the front porch so they know not only is this a big dog, but this dog is so hungry, it ate half the bowl. These are the kinds of things that prowlers actually do take into consideration. All right, next question from Ming. How do we, once we buy the gold coins, how do we use it or sell it when we need to? Okay, this is a very good question, and this is very difficult. In fact, we could spend a lot of time on this, but I'll try to make it short. Use gold coins as a last resort, because anytime you use them, you paint a target on your head that says, ah, I'm the person with gold. So you don't want to use them with anybody who can track you back home. In fact, you want to use them anonymously if you can. I mean, like you go to some central bartering location, kind of a like a co-op or a central trading place, and you spend your gold there, you get something in exchange, and then you're able to walk home or drive home, make sure no one's following you, and that's how you can offload your gold. But to do that, there has to be some kind of organized commerce system, and there will be. No matter what happens, people need to trade, they need to barter, they need to buy and sell. There will always be a central market, even if there's no government. There will always be a market. So you need to just have your wits about you, be sensible about how much you carry, where you carry it. Don't put it in a purse and strap your purse on, because it's going to get ripped off. Of course it is. You got to bury that gold in your sock, in your underwear, in your bra. You got to put the gold somewhere that people aren't going to get to very easily. I'm not joking about that. And you got to have it in a few different places. You got one gold coin in your left sock, one in your right pocket, one, you see what I'm saying? The gold has to be distributed around your body so that when you reach for one coin, people don't think, ah, that's where it is, and they reach in there and try to grab all 10. It's just, I consider this stuff to be just, I don't know, basic common sense. Part of it's from spending so much time in South America where there's a lot of pickpockets. I carry a decoy wallet. I carry decoy cash, decoy ID. I carry all that stuff in South America so that if people have a knife or something or a gun and they try to, mug me, which has never happened, by the way, but if they try to, I'm not going to argue with them. I'm just going to hand over all that stuff. Here, take my fake stuff. Go ahead. It's like 20 bucks in there. Take the 20 bucks. Go party, man. Have a good time. Put the knife away. You don't need the knife. Just take this stuff. See, I'm a very nonviolent kind of guy. Of course, if I can run, I'm going to run, too. that's always a good strategy if you're being mugged. If you can run, run. But if you can't, give them the stuff. It's not worth your life. Okay. During the 1930s, there was gold confiscation in the U.S. This is from David. Today, however, few people own physical gold. Do I think the chances of confiscation are lower today? Well, the question... sorry, somebody's calling me. Probably somebody listening to this. Well, the answer to that is that I think the chances of confiscation are relatively low no matter what. I don't think that it's more than about a 10% chance, but it just depends on how desperate people get in Washington. So it could happen. I'm not betting on it happening, but I'm also not going to be ill-prepared if it does happen. If they come out and they want to confiscate the gold, they declare a national emergency, and they say, for the good of the country, you got to give us all your gold. I'd have to decide what I'm going to do at that point, but I'm probably not going to give them all my gold. you know, I'm probably going to try to help the country in other ways, like by being part of the debates or reforms or something like that. And besides, you know what? I paid a lot of taxes over the years. Didn't I do my part already to fund this government? Didn't you? You paid your taxes. I pay my taxes too. I paid every dime that I ever owed. I paid my taxes to this country. And what did the government do with that money? It spent it on bombs and military campaigns and pharmaceuticals and bailing out rich bankers. That's ridiculous. Why should I give them more money to go waste it on things like that? Why should I give them my gold to go buy more bombs and more bullets and more pharmaceuticals? I, in fact, think that you have a moral obligation to not give up your gold. I think you have a moral obligation to keep that gold in your community, in your city, in your state. If you want to give it to somebody, like let's say there is a confiscation going on, and you don't want to have any gold in your house because you feel like it's a risk, go give it to your church or something. Go give it to a nonprofit. Give it up to somebody who can use it, who will keep it safe. And then you can, with a clear conscience, you can say, I don't have any gold. You know, that's one strategy too. Give it to somebody else. I'm sure they'll be happy to take it. So that answers that question. Okay, what about generators? Andre is asking the question about generators. Yeah, generators are a great solution if you love to have everybody within a mile radius knowing exactly where you live and how prepared you are. Generators make a lot of noise. So it's kind of like broadcasting, come here for all the stored food and stored water and all that stuff. That's why I don't recommend generators unless you have a built-in propane generator, which is relatively quiet. If you have a propane generator, different story. But a gasoline generator, forget it. It's a racket. It draws attention to you. It would be better if you didn't do something really loud like that that draws attention to you. But it depends on the situation. You know, if it's just a hurricane and the neighbors are pretty calm, you know, people aren't freaking out, you can run a generator, no problem. You know, people can listen to the generator while they're licking the ice cream boxes out of their freezer. And they're having the barbecues on the back porch. They can listen to the generator. No problem. There's not a big civil unrest issue. But if times are dangerous, if people are desperate, don't run a generator. You're going to draw attention to yourself. Can you store dog food in the garage, asks David. Or does it get too hot or cold and destroy the nutritional value? Well, heat destroys it more than cold. So beware of heat. But cold, no problem. You can freeze this stuff. In fact, it's a good idea to throw it in the freezer. And then if it does de-thaw, if you lose electricity and it thaws out, then it's just fine. But it will last longer if you freeze it. Okay, another reader asks, as far as buying food, how many days worth of food do you recommend storing in your home per person? How many days could you go with food that you have stored in your home? Okay, I think that's the same question. Well, how many days do you want to eat? Okay, next question. This is from Jamie from Minneapolis. I was wondering if it was a good time to buy a house now that the market is down. Well, I think it's not a good time to buy a house. I think the market, depending on what happens in Washington, this market is very volatile. We could see a further depression of 30% in home prices. It's possible. On the other hand, depending on what the politicians do and how the markets respond, this could be the bottom of the real estate market. I don't claim to have a crystal ball on that. In fact, I don't even have an opinion on that one. I just think there is a potential big risk of yet more downside. I don't think it's a good time to buy yet. I think the right time to buy a house is, as they say in Wall Street, when blood is running in the streets. And they don't mean that literally. They just mean when people are so freaked out and panicked and prices are so depressed that no one wants to buy, that's the time to buy, typically. Okay, Jonathan asks, hey, Mike, we were thinking about Tucson. Is it good for growing food? What about water supply? Okay, Tucson is not a good place for water. No, 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 it's very bad. In fact, Las Vegas, L.A., most of Arizona, parts of New Mexico, these are all bad places for water. In fact, the water that comes to Tucson is shipped across the state. It actually flows through Phoenix before it gets to Tucson. And if there's a water supply problem, I kind of have a feeling that the Phoenix people are going to take it before it gets here. So no, Tucson is not a good place to be. You might say, well, why am I in Tucson then? Well, I'll tell you about that later, but that's a different question. I have other places to go. Okay, if I have cans of quinoa and bringing them through the airport, will they be harmfully radiated? Yes, everything that you take on the airplane, even if it's checked luggage, is being irradiated in some way. However, quinoa, I don't think, you know, it's not loaded with phytonutrients. This is not a very nutrient-dense green food. So I don't think that there's a big risk of the quinoa losing a lot of nutritional value from the radiation. So I would just bring it anyway. I mean, I bring superfoods on the airplane. They get irradiated, and I eat them anyway. Because what's the alternative? Is to eat the airplane food. I'm not gonna eat that stuff. All right, next question. Oh, for storing water, here's a good idea. Someone says, Corey asks, what about ozonating a swimming pool and getting a cover for it? Yeah, that's a great idea. You can store a couple of thousand gallons of water that way. Perfect idea. Good thinking. You can also get some rain storage systems where you have the runoff from your roof goes into a large barrel, and you can filter that water. A good way to collect some water. What do you think about opening a foreign bank account, says John, about protecting against hyperinflation or collapse of the U.S. dollar? Swiss franc, Canadian dollar? Well, I don't recommend the Swiss franc. The fund I recommend, I sent out in the email. It's called the Debt-Free Currency Fund, and it's offered by EverBank. And I understand a lot of people have already put some money in that fund. That is insulated against loss of value in the U.S. currency. I don't trust the Swiss franc for a number of reasons. It's too closely tied to European currencies. I don't think it's safe. I think that the better fund is going to be EverBank. But of course, you might disagree. And you might say, well, the Swiss franc is going to be relatively insulated, relatively safe, because, you know, I mean, it's been a very stable currency, and it's very closely tied to gold values. Historically, it's been very closely tied to gold. So make your own decision on that. Read more on that from Stephen Lieb and see what you think about that. But that's not where I'm going right now with currencies. Okay, we are coming up on 40 minutes after the hour here. I'm going to wrap this up in the next 5 minutes. Sorry to take more time today. I know we have a lot of questions, and I know we have a lot more to cover here. But I respect your time, and I know it's getting especially late on the East Coast, so I'm going to wrap this up in 5 minutes. Next question is, I have a friend that doesn't believe we should continue to print money and add it to the money supply. Where can I find... Oh, he doesn't believe it's happening. Oh, where can I find information about this being done to show him? Well, okay. Just go to the Federal Reserve website. They actually have all the charts there of how much money. It's called the M2 money supply and M1 money supply. And you can look at it right there, and you can see how much money is actually being added to the money supply every single day. Oh, by the way, you know, I have a correction here. I'm sorry. The question about the Swiss franc. I have a correction on that. I forgot that the Swiss franc is actually part of EverBank's debt-free index fund. So it is part of the fund that I'm recommending. However, I'm just not recommending putting all the money in the Swiss franc by itself. So it's more diversified in the fund. But I should correct that it is part of that fund that I am recommending, but there are about 7 or 8 other currencies in that fund. This is a case, folks, where you really don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, which means you don't want to put all your money in one currency. Now think about that. Most people have all their funds in one currency. And most Americans, that's the dollar. So they're betting everything on the dollar. That's a lousy bet. Any way you slice it, that's a lousy bet. So if you haven't done any of this yet, if you haven't diversified into other currencies, then you do have all your eggs in one basket. And that's why you've got to diversify. That's why this is so critical to do. It's so important to divest and cover your bases here. Okay, Joanne asked a question, how much cash do you think people should keep in the house? Well, not a lot, actually. Just enough to cover about a week's worth of basic expenses. Anything that you keep physically in the house is subject to being stolen or destroyed through fire or flooding or something along those lines, or hurricanes, natural disasters. But looting or theft is the most common reason how you could lose that cash. So limit that. Limit how much you have in your house. You might ask, well, where can you store it? Where can you keep it in a place that's safe? Well, I can't really talk about that here because it would be public. But because I know there are some people who are listening to this who signed up that are not necessarily fans of natural news. There are probably a couple of government people who are just listening in to see what we're talking about, and that's fine. I know they have their cash stashed somewhere too, and they're not going to tell you where it is. But you got to think of creative places to put it. And you're not going to go put it in the bank because the bank, you know, they could confiscate cash. There could be a confiscation order, or the bank might shut down. Who knows? So think of physical places where you can store cash that are safe, places that only you know about. We talked last week about the idea of actually putting cash inside large appliances in your house. You know, I don't know any thief that ever broke into a house and took apart the dryer. You know, just to see if there's money hidden in the walls of the dryer. They don't do that. So it's probably a pretty good place to put some, except for the fact that there's a big heating element in the dryer, and you don't want the heat to burn up your cash. So be very careful about where you put this stuff. Okay, next question is from Carolyn. Says there's a very quiet generator out there. It's called the Honda EU 1,000 watt to 3,000 watts. Says it can only be heard within 10 feet. Okay, that sounds great. It's a stealth generator, folks. You can have electricity without making a racket. That sounds great. That's a good strategy. You want to definitely keep things quiet because, again, you don't want to draw attention to the fact that you are prepared or you have stockpiled lots of things. You want to lay low. You want to be calm. And you don't want to advertise the fact that you are kind of like the Home Depot of preparedness. Yeah, don't be bragging to your neighbors about all this stuff. Okay, well, last question. How secure is EverBank for future investment? Well, this is a problem. We don't know. Nobody knows. EverBank is FDIC insured, but again, the FDIC is almost bankrupt. You know, so this is part of the problem. EverBank could fail, and I openly admit that, even though I recommend the fund. However, if you diversify, as we talked about, some in physical gold, some in mining stocks, some in physical products, you know, food, preparedness tools, and things like that, and you have some in EverBank, then if things get really, really bad, you're not going to lose it all. You're only going to lose part of your money, and that's going to actually put you in a good situation because most people will lose most of their money if things get really crazy bad, and you will not. And like I said last week, the person who can simply avoid losing their money is going to be ahead of the game here. If you can avoid losing it, you're doing great. Because most people, I believe, have put themselves in a position where they can lose most of their money if things start to go wrong with the banking situation. Okay, those are all the questions I have time to take tonight. I'm going to wrap this up. A couple of closing comments. One is the disclaimer, once again, that I'm not a financial advisor. You should always work with a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. There is significant risk in any financial decision, including investments, including holding cash, including buying gold. There's risk in everything, and there's risk in doing nothing. So be very aware of all of those risks. Secondly, I want to remind you that this is about being prepared and being confident in facing the future. This is not about being fearful. In fact, you'll find that your fear will subside. If you had any fear, it will subside as you get prepared. As you find yourself becoming more and more prepared for what's coming, you will automatically notice that any fear you might have had in the past is subsiding already. Why does it do that? Because the more prepared you are, the less fear you have to have. I mean, fear is usually fear of the unknown. And if you know what's coming, then... Sorry, I got another email that came in. That's really funny. But if you know what's coming, you don't have any justification for being afraid. Just be confident. You know, weird stuff has hit civilizations throughout history. It's not... I'm getting weird emails now coming in. I'll tell you about them in a minute if you want to hang on. But weird stuff is happening, okay, all throughout world history. This is not unusual to have a failure of a nation. It's not unusual to have some temporary civil unrest or some temporary bank failures or bank runs or whatever. It's not unusual. It happens over and over again throughout history. This is not something to freak out about. All you got to do is be informed, take the steps now to be prepared, insulate yourselves from the problems, avoid the riots, have some preparedness steps in place in your own home, or have a safe haven somewhere else that you can go to so you can ride it out, and then just sit back, chill out. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Because at the end of the day, if you're prepared, you are better positioned than 99.9% of the American people. Most people will never be prepared. They won't even have one day's worth of extra water in their homes. They won't have one day's worth of extra food, unless you count Doritos and Lucky Charms as food, which I don't. But if you do, they've got that sitting around the house. That's not the stuff that's going to keep you alive. So you're going to be in a great position. Just take these steps. Do basic preparedness. Get these things established. You know, get the products that you need. And I don't make any money from any of these products I recommended, by the way, just so you know. Get the things covered, and you're going to be fine. And then just chill out. Don't be afraid. Be confident. Yeah, you know, the winds of change are blowing hard. Some weird stuff might be coming down the line. It's okay. It's okay. We can all get through it together. We can be here and be part of the solution of the next society that emerges out of this. And by the way, last thing, and then I'm going to go here, is I never condone the use of violence. I never recommend that people use violence. Although in self-defense, it may be justified if your life is in imminent danger from an intruder, for example, or if the lives of your family members are in danger, then I can see it being justified. However, never initiate violence and never initiate confrontation with law enforcement or military or anybody like that. Be peaceful. Be helpful as much as you can. Help your community if you can. Help your neighbors if you can. If they're beyond help, then help yourselves. Stay safe. That's the bottom line. Be as helpful as you can, but make sure that you and your family come out of this as safely as you can. And we'll all get through this. I don't know when all this is happening. I don't know if there's going to be infrastructure failures next week or in 5 years or never. We don't know. But be prepared now, and then you're prepared for the next 5 years. You're all set. All right, thanks for joining me today. I hope you learned a lot from this. I really enjoyed sharing it with you again. I'm sorry about going a little bit over time here. However, I had a great time sharing this with you. And I'll tell you what I was laughing about here. someone emailed me and said, what would happen if the police dogs came in and they were trained to sniff out cash? Well, there are police dogs that are trained to sniff out cash. So that's why you have your decoy stash. That's the dog sniffing cash stash for the canine dogs. So, and you can have a little dog munchie treat right there next to the dollars. Just to welcome those canines into your home. So yeah, remember the decoy strategy. Have some decoy cash, have some decoy whatever. You always got to have something to give up in these confiscation type of scenarios. It's a standard procedure used throughout world history by everybody that was being suppressed or oppressed or arrested for no good reason. So read your history books, folks. This is nothing new. You're going to use the same strategies to thrive and survive that all the people have used throughout world history who survived those hard times and went on to help create better societies. So, hey, thanks for joining me. Hope you enjoyed this. I will be sending you an email with a link to this audio, and I'll talk to you 1 week from tonight for part 3 of this live event on health preparedness and financial protection. Have a great week. Talk to you next Wednesday.